Maurice Cousineau from National Bank Financial. We entered the clubhouse turn and headed down the home stretch of our show. And our guest now is Kathy Bazarian-Phelps. She's on live from Los Angeles, California. She's a partner at Danning, Gill, Diamond and Colitz, LLP. Kathy Phelps has over 21 years experience as a lawyer in bankruptcy, law, fraud litigation. She has spoken and written widely on a broad range of fraud and bankruptcy related matters and has co-written the book, The Ponzi Book, a legal resource and unraveling Ponzi schemes. She's a sought after keynote speaker on all issues relating to fraud, due diligence, compliance and Ponzi schemes throughout the United States. Kathy speaks to hundreds of professionals, lawyers, accountants, bankers, financial advisors, investors, and others about mandatory due diligence and red flag warnings that simply cannot be ignored. Kathy has now also written a practical guide for investors and others containing specific tools and due diligence questions to ask and insight into the marketing and sales tactics employed by Ponzi perpetrators and other fraudsters. The book, tentatively titled Ponzi Proof Your Investments, An Investor's Guide to Avoid Ponzi Schemes, is expected to be released soon. Kathy's memberships include International Chamber of Commerce, FraudNet Advisory Board, Association of Certified Financial Crime Specialists Advisory Board, American Bankruptcy Institute, the American Bankruptcy Institute, National Association of Bankruptcy Trustees. Go ahead, Sam.
Yes, how are you, Kathy? How are you doing?
I am good. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for taking some time. I know you, you know, on the internet, I was looking at the Ponzi book, a legal resource for unraveling Ponzi schemes. It's a thick book. How long did it take you to write that book?
It was about a two-year process. There was a lot of law to go through and get organized, and then, you know, new law keeps coming out on a daily basis. So it was a big project. It's about roughly an 800-page book with about 22 chapters covering just about every issue that might come up when a Ponzi scheme's gone bust and how to...
It's not only about Ponzi schemes, but also fraudsters too, right? I mean, there's just so many of them.
Well, yeah, the issues really cross over to any type of fraudulent scheme and, frankly, even extend beyond that. They're just issues that arise in bankruptcy proceedings and other types of insolvency proceedings.
Yeah, so let's hear the latest on the Madoff case. Are defrauded customers getting any of their money back? I know we've been hearing a lot in the news in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, there's been some activity in the Madoff case, which is positive and constructive. The trustee, Irving Picard, had previously made a distribution to the investors of about $335.5 million, which, frankly, was kind of a drop in the bucket, given that the amounts recovered to date are over $9 billion, $9.1 billion, and the total investor losses, the amount of money that investors put in and then didn't get back, is about $17.3 billion. But there have been a number of issues that have been preventing the trustee from making a larger distribution, a few of which were actually just really recently resolved, which is very good news for the investors. Part of the reason that the trustee's been holding on to the money is because there's potentially a $10 billion, that's billion with a B, swing in the allowed amount of the claims that he's going to have to pay out. At the moment, there's about $7.5 billion of claims that are allowed, but there could be an additional $10 billion depending on how certain litigation goes. So he has to reserve certain amounts of money in case he has to pay out on those claims. And then also recently, a ruling became final in connection with $5 billion of the $9 billion that he's holding, and he's now able to distribute some of that money. And then there was also just recently a final resolution on the issue of how to fix the amount of the investors' claims. The investors wanted their claims allowed in the amount that they were promised, the returns that they were promised. And the trustee proposed a methodology which was called the net equity or net investment method, where they got the net difference between what they put in and what they had gotten out during the scheme. So Picard is ready to make about a $2.4 billion distribution targeted for next month in September. There are still some issues. About 1,200 of these claimants, the customers, objected and asked that the trustee be directed to pay them 9% interest on a theory that's referred to as time-based damages. And this is where these claimants, you know, some of them put in money 20 years ago and they lost the use of their money. And so they said, well, look, we want to get paid interest for the loss of the use of that money. And Picard says, well, no, it was all a fraud. I don't think I should have to pay any interest. And there was sort of a compromise position of 3%, not that there has been a compromise, but the court did just rule last week, actually, that Picard can reserve 3% of the funds for that purpose, and that's still to be litigated. And so what that means at this point is with that reserve, he is going to be able to distribute about $2.4 billion, which is going to be with prior monies paid and monies that they've gotten from insurance, about a 33.5% distribution to the customers on their allowed claims.
So Kathy, let me go back here a little bit because there's a lot of information there, but there was $60 billion Ponzi scheme. What happened to the rest? He said $17 billion. What happened to the rest of the money? Was it just made up or inflated or what?
It all comes down to, well, what is the loss? And it depends on who you talk to. If you talk to the investors, their loss is the money that they originally put in. So if an investor put in $1 million, they want that $1 million back, but they also want the returns that were promised to them. And if they put that $1 million in 20 years ago, there's a whole lot of interest that would have accrued on that.
Yeah.
Whereas the trustee and now the courts have agreed that the way to value the claim is simply the $1 million that was put in, assuming they didn't get anything out.
With no interest.
Excuse me?
With no interest.
With no interest.
Okay.
And so that's why there's this discrepancy in the numbers that are getting thrown around. The $17.3 billion is the actual loss. And a $55 to $60 billion number is if everyone had gotten what they were promised, that would be the loss.
So what about the professional fees paid to Madoff Case? Are they fair or too high? We're looking at $250 million going to Picard. Is that right?
Well,
I mean,
the numbers are admittedly huge. And I think if you look at Picard, who himself personally as the trustee it's under $10 million. If you look at all of his professionals, including his main law firm and all of the professionals he's had to hire worldwide, I think that number is approaching more like $500 million. And yes, that is an enormous number. As are all of the numbers in the Madoff case. I mean, everything else is just dwarfed in comparison. The professionals have just filed a ninth round of fee applications, and they put right in there, look, we're giving the public interest discounted rate, which averages out to about $350 per hour, which is not an unreasonable rate. They talk about all of the money that's been discounted, but you look at the numbers and they are huge. However, I do want to say I have an opinion on the subject because I do think that the criticism of Picard and his professionals has really gone too far and really doesn't accurately portray what's going on. I think that people are looking for someone to blame, and understandably, there's a lot of anger surrounding the Madoff case. But I think that people have really lost sight of the fact that Irving Picard is, frankly, a neutral fiduciary. He's not the one who committed the crime, and he's been brought in to mop up what is an extraordinary mess. And if you put the numbers of this case in relation to what's going on, you know, in the rest of the world, frankly, you know, they're reasonable or close to reasonable. And you've got a court looking at these numbers and evaluating them independently. But I was curious a couple of months ago. I looked at what the gross domestic product was of all of the countries in the world because I wanted to kind of see where the Madoff case fit in that.
Okay.
If you look at the $9 billion that Irving Picard is managing, and the huge infrastructure that he's had to set up, that number is actually greater than 30% of the gross domestic product of the world's countries. I mean, it's an extraordinary effort here, and he's had to have lawyers and litigation in dozens of countries. And if you also think about the fees in terms of, like, a contingency fee, you know, often a client will hire a lawyer on a contingency basis for 30% or 40%. You know, if you were to pay a contingency lawyer a 30% contingency fee in this case, you'd be talking about $3 billion in fees. We're only at $500 million, so, you know, it looks like a pretty good deal if you look at it that way. So there certainly is a lot lot of criticism. I think that, you know, while some of it, you know, here and there may be justified, I think all said Irving Picard has done a phenomenal job in a very, very difficult, very sizable case.
I'd like to have him on one day on my radio show to explain, you know, how he went to find all the money and so on. But how did the Madoff Ponzi scheme, Kathy, went on for decades? What were some of the warning signs that the victims of Bernie Madoff could have been could have seen before investing this money?
Well, you know, it hindsight really is 2020. I mean, there was so much going on that really should have been glaring red flags. You know, one of them that was mentioned earlier in your show, the auditor shop. You know, a one or a two person shop in a strip mall handling hundreds of billions of dollars of transactions. You know, my concern about something like that is, really, can these two people possibly process that amount of information? If anyone had stopped and thought about that, they would have questioned it. But really, probably the largest glaring red flag here was that the returns that Madoff was promising just defied what was going on in the market. I mean, they were consistently too good to be true, which is what everybody says, right? Harry Markopoulos, who was the big whistleblower who went to the SEC on a number of occasions.
He was the one that testified in Congress, right?
Correct. Okay. And he, you know, I can't imagine being him who sees all these red flags and is trying to tell the world about them and the SEC about them and, you know, keeps getting shut down. But he went, you know, he did a whole study and he said, I'm going to look at the market from the years of 1993 to 2000. And during those 87 months, Madoff only lost money in three of them. But then he compared that to what was going on in the S&P 500, and that had been down 28 of those same months. So why hadn't anybody else been able to duplicate this great strategy that Madoff was using or was pitching to everybody? So that was probably the biggest glaring red flag. Another one that I would have been concerned about was how he was reporting to his customers. He was generating paper statements. And these days, you know, you should be able to get pretty much everything in electronic format. And I read a quote that Madoff had said before his Ponzi scheme had been disclosed. And he said that market timing and stock picking are both important for the strategy to work. Well, what we know now is his market timing was, well, let me wait until the market closes and pick the stocks that performed well, and I'll do that after the market. So, you know, his timing and his stock picking, you know, were all completely made up on paper statements that he could put in the mail after the fact, and just he had a whole second set of books and records on that subject.
Did you just say paper statement, these sophisticated investors didn't pick that up?
If I got
a paper from the mail, I'd say, hey, what is this? I mean, I know what an average, right, Morris? An average monthly statement looks like.
Well, I personally like paper statements, but the fact that they were not available electronically is what should have been the concern, right? These days, everything. And he was pitching himself as being, you know, sophisticated. Well, why wouldn't a sophisticated shop like this have electronic access to the records? You know, the other thing about this, and time and time again, we see these same repeating patterns in all these Ponzi cases. It was a secret club, and people were begging their friends to get them into this secret club. Well, if you ever find yourself in that position, you should be wondering, you know, if it's that good of a deal.
Get out.
Yeah, you know, and it's that secret. And Madoff also was expressly telling people, don't disclose that you're involved with me. He's telling his feeder funds, don't put my name anywhere on any of your brochures. Well, that should be a cause for concern. And then when people actually confronted him and asked him, you know, explain your strategy, he's like, oh, it's too complicated. I can't be bothered to explain it to you. Well, those types of things should really be red flags.
Kathy, I'm going to ask you a question. What is the, let's go back over here. Was it the Security Exchange Commission's fault that Madoff's scheme went unnoticed for so long? Was it their fault?
Well, you know, just like people want to blame Irving Picard and are very angry about his fees, people really want to blame the SEC for the fraud and are very angry that they didn't detect it. And on both fronts, I get it, and I understand that. But again, we have to keep the perspective here that it was not the SEC that was running the fraud, right? But they are there to protect us. And they absolutely fell down on the job here. There is a report of the SEC, an internal watchdog, the Office of Inspector General, that did a report. A report was commissioned, and they put this report out in August of 2009. And the name of the report is investigation of failure of the SEC to uncover Bernard Madoff's Ponzi scheme dash public version. Now, I personally am most curious to know what's in the non-public version, but we will never know that, because the public version, I have to say, is very condemning of the SEC and what happened here. The good news is that they didn't find any type of an inappropriate relationship that somehow, you know, influenced the SEC, but that's pretty much the only good news in this report. Otherwise, the report, which is quite lengthy, went through 6 substantive complaints and 2 reports that were out there in the world between 1992 and 2008 that this commission found warranted an examination and investigation of Madoff and his company specifically for were they operating a Ponzi scheme. And these various complaints and reports raised a number of red flags, a couple of which I've already mentioned. You know, Madoff was unregistered. These were unregistered securities. That in and of itself should be cause for concern. Not outrageously high, but the higher than market returns that were consistent, and that there was no loss to special customers. The complaints were containing all these type of words, that there was an unrealistic volume of options that Madoff representing who was trading, and one SEC examiner actually said that there was some suspicion as to whether Madoff was trading at all. So they're getting all of these reports that are telling them all these things. No one can duplicate its strategy. Madoff is very secretive. One complaint was entitled, "The World's Largest Hedge Fund is a Fraud." And then another concerned citizen wrote a report that said, "It may be of interest to you that Madoff keeps 2 sets of records, the most interesting of which is on his computer, which is always on his person." So you've got the SEC getting bombarded over the years with all of this information, and they didn't do anything about it. And this report found that these complaints contained specific enough information that the SEC really should have examined Madoff for operating a Ponzi scheme.
They actually fell on the wheel. But I wanted to ask you, if you have maybe about a minute and a half. I just love that headline. You have a new book coming out called The Ponzi Proof Your Investment. I love that, by the way. Ponzi Proof Your Investment, An Investor's Guide to Avoiding Ponzi Schemes and Other Fraudulent Scams. Is that book coming out shortly?
Hopefully in the next few months, yes. I have really had a fun time, honestly, writing it. It's a sad subject, but I have read, in writing the other book that I wrote, the Ponzi book, the legal resource book, I have read virtually every single legal decision that's come out in Ponzi scheme cases, and I follow every story that comes out every day on Ponzi scheme cases that are breaking, and so I can see with good visibility what's going wrong for people. And so I really wanted to take the benefit of all of that information and put it in a very understandable guidebook, a roadmap, if you will, with examples, you know, little pull-out examples. It's a couple sentences of, and here's what happened in Madoff, and here's what happened in Allen Stanford, and take all of these cases and really hand investors the information that they need in order to avoid investing in Ponzi schemes. I want to go out there and educate people so that they don't ignore all of these red flag warnings for greed or for security or for whatever reason, that they really are not afraid to ask the hard questions.
How do we get a hold of you? How can they get this book, and what website do you have it on? Go ahead.
Well, the best way to reach me is at my website, which is kathybphelps.com. You can email me through there. There's also a lot of information about the first book, which is at www.theponzibook.com, and you can reach me through there as well. I also have, which might be of interest to some of your listeners, a blog, which is the Ponzi Scheme blog, which is I'm putting out as many stories as I can on these interesting Ponzi schemes that are breaking, but at the end of each month, I'm actually taking a summary of everything that happened in the month and really starting to expand worldwide. Just stories that I picked up from the news, and the volume of activity is really overwhelming.
And I want to thank you for that. Kathy, I hope you're going to get on to our show in the future. That was Kathy Phelps. She's partner of Danning Gill, Diamond and Collins in Los Angeles, California. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
And my name is Morris Guzino, National Financial.
Thanks a lot, Sam. And keep in mind, that guy Charles Ponzi emigrated from Italy to Montreal. He came from Montreal and started on things. Yes,
and again,
did.
My name is Samuel Uzurza for the Money Bin Show on Radio Shalom, CJRS 1650 AM in Montreal. Happy capitalism. God bless you.